Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Fred. I am responsible. I am accountable. I am capable of assisting people to find their true voice and then deliver it effectively into the world around us. With 40 years in mental health, 32 of them as a psychiatrist, and then a massive amount of conversations, including podcasting and expert speaking, keynote speaking, I have the opportunity to really see the magic that it takes to find one's authentic self and then deliver it effectively into the world. And if you're like me, you can see that now more than ever, that's what's called for. So today is that day. Now is that time. Come forth. Join me in the broadcast. You'll see on the other side of this, at True Voice with Dr. Fred. Dude, that music's way better.
So much better.
It's
holy
so
shit.
Much better.
I actually feel enthusiastic after right. listening to that intro rather than like, oh God, I'm on the verge. I don't know if I want to live through this. I'm not sure if I can manage another day on Earth. Like, I'm pretty excited. Pretty excited now. So tell me, Fred.
No more come forth.
Tell me what inspired this particular you. You look particularly rugged, Harley riding, like badass today. Mm-hmm. You're really owning the look. I feel like you should have a bottle of Jack Daniels in your hand and maybe a Winston or something like that.
A Winston. We got Winston.
You've got a Winston the cat. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. It really, there's a whole other level of edge and maybe, shall I say, sort of fuck it to your vibe right now that I just want to reflect and I'm just kind of curious if you have anything to say about that.
Well, let's see. I'll try to explain. I didn't notice that was happening through the day. I've had 16 sales calls in the last 2 days. None of them have really responded. That's not really true. Many of them have been spectacular calls, just meeting people. And we'll call them sales calls, but they're really just checking up follow-ups on people who have been in my world in the past. And it's fun to catch up with a lot of them. And then I just came off of my mastermind. Every 2 weeks on Tuesday, we have the hour and a half mastermind that goes with my course, the True Voice course. And I don't know. I think, you know, it was easy to put this sweater on today. It was kind of chilly in here. So I put on my Rolling Stone sweater, you know.
Yeah. For those who are just listening and not watching this, Fred has a black zip-up sweatshirt with a Rolling Stones logo on it and a sort of a matching black and white tie-dye headband. And he definitely looks like he just pulled in off of his Harley. And anyway, you are rocking. If I didn't know you as well as I did, I would maybe think that you were in a late life crisis, but I think you actually went through the late life crisis and you're now on the other side of that. And now you're owning your true vibe more than ever. So I'm not concerned. I'm applauding this look.
All right. Well, good. Yeah. The true vibe is right here. I've been talking that shit all day and really just talking about the urgency of bringing people. Like, it's an urgency, Sam. You know, if it's so many people are just kind of screwing around and, you know, kind of making it through the day or thinking we're back to where we were, which was somehow comfortable. And there's just that there is a missing that is like the shadow of an elephant in the kitchen. There's a missing in people's worlds these days that is very, very, very large. And maybe now more than ever, like the intro says, there's a opportunity or a request, an invitation, a mandate to get in touch with yourself and speak your truth, you know, to actually.
I'm touching myself right now, just thinking about our upcoming guest who we have coming on in just a moment here.
Oh my God. Here we go. This is going to be
I don't have a better
show all over again.
Bring him on,
Sam.
TJ. Let's go. Let's go.
This is going to be version two of Sam's podcast with me. from years ago.
So who is this cat that y'all bringing on? As if I don't know. Talk to me about Sean.
As if you don't know. Yeah, yeah. We both know him well, maybe a little bit too well sometimes. But what a brilliant man. And this guy has been on a soul journey that I find incredibly admirable. And I love him to death. And I learn to love this man more and more every day. He's truly the way that he is approaching his life and his openness and willingness to evolution and his commitment to doing what he is doing in the world is truly admirable. And so without further ado, Sean Enten, the Stroke Hacker. Welcome, Sean.
Wow. What an intro. Thanks, Sam. Thank you.
You're welcome. Meant every word of it.
Sean, let me ask you a question, pal. Most of the time that I've been with you, I haven't been able to ask this question. And so now that it's my podcast, I'm just going to launch it into the question that I've been wanting to ask you since like the moment I met you. And I don't mean to freeze you in your pants. I've just like have it be that, you know, your testicles go up in your abdomen and stuff. And I really, it's not like I'm attempting to really frighten you or anything, but I really want to know something, which is like, seriously, if there was no reason to be worried about what people would think of you, then who the fuck are you? Like, really, really, Sean, like, really, who are you?
Who am I?
Yeah, really, man. I'm saying really.
If really in this space right now, I fight for those who need me. Who need us. I take a stand for those who can't stand. I speak for those who can't speak.
All right. That's hot stuff. And I want to hear the next level in.
Wow. It's interesting how this podcast is happening this week. Cause this week, this Black Friday is my tenure.
Got it.
Of the whole event. Yeah. Or 11 is 11 years, Sam, or 10 years? It's 2011.
I think you said 11 years. In fact, it's 11 years, and we happen to be on 11/11/22. All very auspicious here right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So the event, Sean, you want to describe the event and maybe for the purposes of right now, because I know you can take this tangent and go forever with it.
Just for the record, it's 11/22/22. Not 11/11/22. But go ahead.
Yes. Thank you. That's what I thought I was saying.
it's. I think Fred, you started to hear this part of this recently. It was this last weekend. I was in San Jose 11 years ago, watching a good friend of mine get the shit kicked out of him and getting him ready for the fight of his life to retain the belt in the UFC. So I was in San Jose for this last weekend, and ringside, I'm starting to feel symptoms of what I didn't know at the time was a massive stroke. I was standing, ringside. Of course, we were drinking and having fun and, rooting for my good friend to just get out of there alive. And while all this was happening, I was, my balance, I was getting unbalanced. My vertigo was kicking in and I was having trouble lifting my left arm. And I thought it was nothing. And I kept feeling this huge lump in the back of my throat and my neck, not knowing what it was. I thought it was just, a bruise or a bump. When you train in jiu-jitsu or martial arts, you're getting banged up all the time. I was training with the Navy SEALs. I was training with the UFC fighters and living the dream life, at least of everything I thought. And then all of a sudden,
what is training with SEALs and UFC fighters? What does that training entail? What were you doing? I think this is important to look at.
Of course. No, it's a great question. I wanted to be like them. I had this feeling or this take on life at 39 that I wanted to be better. I wanted to be stronger. I wanted more. I needed this. I needed that. More, 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 more. More got me exactly where it needed to get me, where chaos erupted. And I had the biggest break of my life.
where this led to a massive stroke. Fighting for my life, being, you know, going from immortal to mortal in a matter of seconds. Losing everything. Everything.
So let's fast forward to now, right now, since this is your 11-year anniversary.
Yeah. Okay.
How much of your waking hours is spent kind of wishing things were the way that they used to be? And how much of your waking hours is spent tuning in with what's real for you right now, and the fact that things will never be the way they used to be? Let me just jump right into the deep end of the pool here with you.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. No, I get it. It's, I don't know if waking hours of wishing I was something else. I think it's waking hours of pushing myself to see what I can do within this body, and how can I heal, and how can I get better. But with that, it also comes a price, even now. Because I don't give myself enough of a break.
What does that look like? What does getting better look like? What does it look like on the day-to-day for you? Like,
you know,
there's the physical, there's the mental. Like, what is a typical day of, and how much do you work on getting better, and what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, my day started at 5 a.m. with my trainer showing up here, knowing that I have to get my body moving. If my body doesn't go, if I don't get into movement or get my heart rate up or start moving up my muscles, I will atrophy and I will reverse. And I just, I think it was built inside of me before the stroke, that I just take that same mindset as it is now.
See, there's something really interesting in that. And I think that, you know, we're talking, Fred, you and I are talking about getting Aaron Baker on the show here in a few weeks. And there's something very interesting that I think a lot of people don't really understand, that when you've had a disability that is so incredibly life-changing and that affects your physical body as much as it does, the rest of your life is maintenance.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like you can't let a day go by that you're not maintaining. And like you were saying, you can easily reverse and start deteriorating.
Yeah.
And like anyone can deteriorate through not getting exercise, but the speed with which that happens post stroke, or in Aaron's case, post quadriplegia, is so rapid. And I'm just curious about, you know, just to get a sense for, and I have my own relationship to this being paraplegic, but I just want to get a sense for the urgency of that necessity and how it impacts you emotionally and psychologically to know every day when you wake up, I've got to do this or else, which is very different from an able-bodied person. It's like, well, I could go to the gym or I could skip today. That's just not an option for you. What does that feel like?
Well, you know, Sam, you know, we've talked about this at length. It's no longer an elective. It's now a requisite. You know, Fred can wake up every day and choose to go work out. I can't. I have to go. I have to, in my mind, I need to move my body somehow, some way, where I am forcing myself into movement. And just the way my life lives now. But also at the same time, you've taught me, you know, the sense of flow, the sense of the accelerator, and the sense of the brake. Because I will push the accelerator way too hard, even on this body now, and I'll burn the fuck out. And I'll hit a wall. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is, you know, I would have to say it's sadness, it's depression, it's filled with everything. I mean, there's so many different, you know, highs and lows with this. I mean, lagging around, and you know this, lagging around a body that's half, you know, that works halfway, you know, my left side, you know, if you were to take a machete and cut me in half, that's what it was like. But my stroke really affected my brain because it short-circuited everything. So I get neuro fatigue, I get exhausted early, you know, easier. I can flip a switch faster. I mean, I used to be so moody and so so many things were ups and downs, highs and lows, that finally this year, I'll have to say, I finally found my own pace, and my own pace is now working for me, which is really nice. And I give that thank you to you, Sam, because I mean, you really have worked with me hard, and you've given me your time, and you taught me so much about just pacing myself, because I, even before my stroke, I didn't know what pacing was like. I had to accomplish and do and achieve and ascend every mountain that I was faced with. I had to go up it my way.
Thank you. I'm seeing something different today. So there's, the grief, the depression, this, pain, the misery, or the maybe probably occasionally a sense of the unfairness, or the what ifs, or the those kinds of things that, I mean, I think it's, in some ways, it's almost noble and self-sustaining to answer Sam's first question that, no, I don't think of that in the past. I think about how far I can take myself. But yet you reference these points because they are in the, there is something in the past. There is something that you're both running away from or acknowledging or being with that then fuels you to wake up at 5 a.m. and train every day, or that fuels you to be your very best man, or fuels you to, yes, the rest of life is maintenance, but there's something about taking those steps forward and being the voice for people who don't have a voice and being the stand for people who literally can't stand. Do you have some way of explaining or maybe tapping into the transformation of Sean, the sounds like a pretty wild dude, hanging out with the UFC, hanging out with the SEALs and, bringing that kind of lifestyle the day before the event, Thanksgiving of 11 years ago, and who you now be, which is generally, at least in appearance, a fairly gentle soul, strong and gentle soul. Talk to us a little bit about how does that molding, how was that molding from within? How was that experienced?
Deep question there, Fred. It's, you go from being, it's the art of the samurai, the physical body, to the art of the samurai in the mental body, the conscious mind versus this avatar of us. So I've really had to, and I look at it now, I'm just having a moment, I'm definitely having a moment, but I've often say this stroke was a gift, because if it wasn't a gift, I would never have met you guys. I wouldn't be living in my purpose. I would not be living in my purpose right now. And this is what I'm supposed to be doing. But getting here is fucking arduous. It's not fucking easy either. It's tough. And I definitely still have my highs and lows with it.
Mm-hmm. As you should. I mean, it would be insane to imagine that you wouldn't have your highs and lows with it.
Yeah. I got a question for Fred. Fred, if you were still practicing and making your rounds as a psychiatrist, MD, and you had walked into my room post a craniectomy, walking into my room, just coming out of a coma, and here I am not being able to talk, what are your first words to me?
Your post craniectomy, say the circumstances again.
Okay, post craniectomy. So they just induced me in a coma for 10 days. They took the skull off my head to relieve the swelling in my brain, stored in my abdomen, and here I am now waking up, not being able to speak and having the brain of a 3-year-old child at the age of 39.
Yeah.
Where do you begin?
A huge smile. Welcome back.
Mm.
Hello.
That's beautiful. I get that.
How's it going?
That resonates with me. Thank you.
Yeah, I an honor to share eye contact with you at that moment.
Mm.
Sheer honor.
Yeah.
A gift to be in the room with someone like you.
Thank you. Thank you.
What was the first words that you heard, and were they traumatic?
Don't scratch your abdomen because your skull's in your belly. And the first thing I tried to say was, they put my brains in my belly. I don't understand. Because I was leaning in, not really understanding what was happening to me, but I, you know, was coming out of the coma. And in the coma, I had a whole 10-day long journey of an experience where it crossed over and came back. And here I am trying to find my balance again, you know, being in my body and trying to figure out what the fuck just happened to me.
Yeah.
You know, and being heavily medicated on everything, and trying to figure out, you know, what's the next step. And all I kept remembering was that since I was in the coma for 10 days, they told me I had to keep breathing really hard and loud, or they wouldn't put a trachea into me, because my lungs, you know, after 10 days of being in a coma, I guess something happens with the lungs, and they want to trachea you. So I was fighting with them with one hand, saying, you're not putting another anything into my body, and I was done. So I just started breathing. And I was able to breathe on my own.
Yeah. All right. I have a question now for the two of you. So Sam and I have had the opportunity to interview people who have post-traumatic losses of limb function, et cetera, on a couple occasions in a previous podcast. And now, Sam, the next question I want to ask you is your level of relating to Sean here as a brother, you know, waking up in the hospital, like, what the fuck just happened here? What was your first moments, if you care to share, about what you recall when it was like, holy fuck, and what lands for you as a memory on that very day with your accident?
Yeah. Yeah, so the one major difference between my experience and what Sean experienced, and my experience was that I was riding in the back seat of a car driven by a drunk driver, went off the road, hit a tree. I broke my T12 vertebra and became paralyzed from my belly button down when that happened. Completely lost all sensation and motor function in my body from my belly button down at that point. And my first, I never lost consciousness at all. I was wide awake the entire time. Didn't hit my head. Didn't even get any bruises. No bruises, no blood, just a shattered spine. And my first thought, the first experience that I recall having was, oh, fuck. That was really the only thing that I could think at that point. Because I just turned 24 years old, just beginning my adult life. I was a cyclist. I just finished cycling across the U.S. I hiked every day, ran, snowboarded, skied. I was not someone who sat around playing computer games. I was the kind of guy who was always active, always using his legs. Not only that, but I also lost my sexual function at that point. And when I say navel down, everything navel down went away completely. So you can imagine a young man at the age of 24 suddenly experiencing half of his body gone like a ghost. And the top part is still functioning, but the lower part is a ghost. And I was terrified. I just went into a state of complete shock and terror when it happened. And I recall sitting in that seat, in the back seat of that 72 Nova in the middle of the night, you know, midnight out in the middle of nowhere, out in this rural place in Western Massachusetts, just trying to stay in my body, but also, and also trying not to move an inch, because I was also a trained wilderness first responder as well. And I knew, I just actually practiced removing people with spinal cord injuries from wilderness situations just a couple of weeks before my own spinal cord injury. So I'm there totally alert, watching my every movement like a hawk, thinking, oh my God, I'm paralyzed. And yet maybe there's some hope that I will recover from this if I don't move at all. So more than just paralyzed from the waist down, my whole system was paralyzed because I was terrified of even moving a centimeter. And so I was, when they brought the jaws of life, tore the roof off the car and slipped the backboard down and pulled me out of the car, the whole time I was just watching them like a hawk. And over the next several hours, I just was in a state of sheer terror as I was shipped off of an ambulance into the hospital, vomited in the emergency room. It was horrifying. It's very horrifying, and a sense of complete helplessness, while at the same time maintaining. Now, the one major difference between myself and Sean is that I didn't have any cognitive shifts because I didn't experience a brain injury. My brain shifts were entirely emotional and about my sense of identity versus actual cognitive impairment. So I was very lucid to the fact that who I was and the function of my body was now completely not who I was going to be potentially for the rest of my life.
I see you sighing, Sean. What are you hearing as your friend
talks? Yeah, I'm recalling everything that Sam is talking about. I'm recalling my steps and what happened to me and feeling him as I felt me, you know, as I feel me, because it was similar with me. I lost everything on the left side. So I lost everything from the belly button down. I mean, people say it was just my left side, but back then I couldn't move anything. I know movement from my belly button. And they were just hoping that I was going to regain my bladder control or just being able to pee. Cause I was, you know, being catheterized, I was rectal tubes in the coma out and just trying to fucking figure out what the hell was going on, trying to figure out what my name was, who's talking to me. I knew I had two daughters. I knew I was married, but none of this made sense. It was just like, it was living a bad dream. It was like, I knew who my kids were, but I couldn't even verbally speak to them. And if they came in the room, the noise and the light was so damaging on me that I wasn't able to be present with them. So here they were, you know, moments before I'm off to SeaWorld. I had one kid on my chest in the Bjorn, one kid on my shoulders, and I'm running around like Super Dad. And now I'm paralyzed and not being able to be the father who I was at that moment. And that to me was more terrifying than anything else. And then, you know, and then often being moved from one hospital to the next hospital, you know, because I was in rehab probably for about 8 weeks post-acute. And then after that, I was probably in and out of rehabilitation. I'm still in rehabilitation now. It doesn't stop. And, you know, feeling what Sam was talking about, you know, for me, what really fucking sucked was I lost all my independence. I had someone wiping my ass, someone changing my diapers, someone feeding me. And here I am at 39, having everything was given me. Everything was perfect. Now I can't poop, I can't pee, I can't shave, and I can't eat. I couldn't put the fork to my mouth because I couldn't find my mouth. Everything was gone. Like, everything was such a freaking issue. Looking back now, it's just, it is what it is. But I still recall all these things.
Okay. So I want to give a perspective, I think, that's going to come from the general public that maybe they don't even know that when they're listening to this. First of all, if I could just express my gratitude for both of you feeling safe enough in my presence to speak so candidly about your experience. I don't even know how to acknowledge that, and thank you. What us so-called able bodies might be hearing here is actually how remarkably similar both of your accidents are. Unbelievably similar from out here. your experiences, the intensity, the acuity, the terror, the altered state that happens instantaneously, the misinformation and the hopes and dreams crushed, and very, very, very similar. Much more similar than I had ever put together, knowing the two of you from out here, from 30,000 feet. It's just two accidents that look so similar from here.
Mm.
But as you speak, there's such distinct differences indeed. You know, Sam says the big difference is this. And you say, yeah, the big difference is this. And it is so different subjectively. The perspective, however, is that, the instantaneous nature for us so-called able bodies, that, you know, this can be taken away in a split second, or this can change, maybe not even taken away. It can change. Like, you get to be you. Like, in some ways, you get to be you. You get to be a unique soul who is missing the left side of his body or is missing the lower side of his body. There is when interacting with able bodies, let's see, that's not even fair. So when interacting with people who are not acutely injured, what's the greatest challenge? We'll start with you, Sean. What should we know is really the greatest challenge?
To keep up. I was always a leader, to keep up and to feel that I'm not holding anyone back. And, you know, I'm always, you know, before I never asked anyone for anything. I was self-sufficient. Now it's like with me, I still require a little bit of help or assistance with things. Where I look at Sam and I don't see his wheelchair. This guy is more able body than most anyone else I know. I mean, he's able to do things that I look at him and go, wow, look at him do all this. Look at him hack this. Look at him hack that. Look how he gets in the car. Look how he does things. And his mind is so fucking brilliant. I mean, he goes and goes. And I look at you, Fred, and I wonder, you know, with me, I have memory issues. I mean, I've got other kinds. I've got endurance issues. There's stuff that I just have to laugh at myself now because, you know, it's part of just being human. And yeah, I see Sam's looking at me right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I got something for you on the backside of that. Let's go to Sam. Sam, what's the hardest thing? What's it really? I mean, let's get flipping honest, Sam. I've never asked you this question straight up, and I really want your serious, like, what is the thing that is the hardest thing in dealing with us, the us that I almost apologize for being, which is the unacutely injured?
I would say that's a very good question. Here's the way I'm going to answer that. There's a tendency to sort of generalize. I think a lot of people, able-bodied people, will project a sort of generalization towards people with some sort of acute disability. And the generalization is either that person is a victim or that person is a hero. It's almost like kind of wanting to compartmentalize the individual in a way that, okay, how do I frame my communication with this person so that they feel like I see them? Like either this person needs help with opening a door or closing the trunk on his car, or this person is so damn impressive, like, holy shit, that's amazing that he's walking down a bike path, that he's wheeling down that bike. This just came up today. I was at the car wash. Someone came up to me, and it's a very sweet comment, but it was a very unaware comment too. She says, I see you every day on the bike path. You're just amazing. It's so inspiring. I'm like, it's a goddamn, like, it's just a few hundred feet from my house and it's flat. There's no, like, what's the big deal to me? You know, so to her, the way to relate is, I'm such a hero. I'm so inspiring. And to others, the way to relate is, oh my gosh, like, what can I do for you? And those general categories, those projections that people tend to do a lot of the time, tend to, A, overlook the fact that I'm just at a soul level, just as whole and complete as they ever are. And I have both my challenges and my, I'm a human being just like everyone else. I have where I'm skilled, where I'm not skilled, where I'm aware, where I'm not aware. I don't consider myself a victim or a hero. I'm just a human being having a human experience. So that's one thing. And then the other thing is that the things that I do experience that are particularly challenging that most able-bodied people are spared are so nuanced and complicated and can create such a feeling of aloneness, because most people cannot relate to the nuanced complications that one experiences, nor are they really interested in relating to those things too. So there can be a sense of internal isolation that results from the regular day-to-day maintenance and complications that one has to deal with a disability, that are really challenging to vocalize and don't really have a place in normal casual conversation.
Well said. Beautiful. We're going to go to a commercial, and when we come back, we're going to change the direction just a touch. I look forward to having you back in just a minute. And if you're with us, stay riveted. We'll see you in 1 minute. Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Fred again. I wanted to explain to you a little bit about one of the names I have called the Undoctor. What is the Undoctor? Well, after about 15 years in the field of me being misaligned with what I was doing, because I was medicating people even knowing that medications were not the right answer, and I was diagnosing people even though I didn't always believe that they had the diagnosis that I said that they had, even though they did meet the criteria, etc., I like seeing humans for exactly who they are and who they're not, and not as a diagnosis. So in 2006, I began the process of becoming the Undoctor. I unmedicated, undiagnosed, and then undoctrinated a bunch of people. Like, people no longer had to come to a psychiatrist because their condition's cleared. This isn't true for everyone. It may not be true for you, but for some folks who know that their diagnosis doesn't fit and who know that they don't want to keep going through with medications and don't want to be seen as someone who's defective or afflicted, this turned out to be a great intervention. Over time, I stopped doing that, and I no longer do a whole lot of conventional psychiatry. Now I just help people walk through their life and find their true voice. I connect with people straight up, not as if there's a power gradient between a doctor and a patient, but as two humans connecting and resonating with each other. As it turns out, that's where all healing emanates from. So today, I've developed the Welcome to Humanity brand over the last 6 or 7 years, and that really takes into consideration all of this. It is self-explanatory. Basically, each and every experience that we have with humanity is just as exquisite as another, even if it's deeply uncomfortable. From there, we get to actually share these human experiences. From there, we get to resonate and connect, and from there, healing takes place. I also have been helping people with their true voice, and that's why you're here today at True Voice with Dr. Fred. I help people find that true voice, really their authentic self, their core value system, and then deliver it effectively into a world that is eagerly awaiting to hear you. Without your voice, no one will ever hear you. And without your true voice, no one will ever know you. But with your true voice, you can find healing, peace, and love. True voice is what it takes to end all wars. So welcome to True Voice with Dr. Fred.
Have we ended all wars yet, Fred?
I have to check. I'll get back. I got to check. I'll check the news.
After check the newspaper. See if we've ended all wars yet. I think your intention for this podcast has probably gotten pretty close to ending all.
Yeah,
wars.
We're gonna have to come up with a better intention. I think once the last war gets over, then all we'll have to pick something else.
It'll at least end the war of the bullshit going on in someone's mind, I suppose. And the true
all right,
voice
so let's go there. Let's go there. So you know, one of the things I'm really struck with is, people tend to be really serious about the stuff that you guys are talking about, right? You might want to get down to business. You want to put your feet down. There's no room for smiling, no room for joking, no room for laughing, no room for, just rib tickling, whatever. Not so much. And, at least us able-bodied, we think like, oh, no, we need to stay like dead serious during these times.
We better be super sincere to show our respect.
Exactly. Now, the real answer to that isn't that, and I'd like you both to kind of speak to that. What is the real answer? What, Sean? I'd love for you to speak to this. Like, being dead serious about this whole thing must get old really freaking fast.
Sure. I mean, I got it for you. So often people will stop me, in a restaurant or somewhere, and they'll go, "What happened to you, man? Skiing accident? Skateboarding accident?" I'd be like, "No, don't go to Catalina." And they're like, "Why? The great whites are out there, and they're nasty, but you should see what I just did to that motherfucker." And they're literally looking at me and they go, "What do you mean?" I said, "Yeah, don't go to Catalina because there's too many sharks out there." I've said, I make up shit because people get so fucking serious, and it's like the show conversation's over it. It's like I'll say to them, "Alaska was bumpy," and they're like, "Why? Polar bears, they're everywhere." It's like, I mean, they don't know. I mean, it's just like, and, they see me coming and they don't know what to make up. People are just like, what the hell is going on? And so at times I like to have a little bit of a smile and a laugh. And if I can get someone to smile, then I won them over because it can get so dark and so many questions and questions. And like, Fred, you'll get this. It's like, a vault, like more the same fucking shit. It's like, okay. No, let's talk about something else, It's not always about me or Sam. It's about what's going on with the rest of the world. You guys are more fucked up than we will ever be.
That's for sure.
And no one should ever feel sad or bad for either of us. We're all human beings. We got the fucking chance to live and tell our story. We have a gift now. And our gift is really to, in my eyes, to make people laugh and smile and inspire the hell out of them.
Mm-hmm. So when are you going to actually learn how to be funny?
Exactly. you're right. Yeah, you're totally right. I'm learning. You can teach me, though. You have a joke?
I think I do have some jokes. I have some jokes. I want to talk a little bit. Once we interviewed a guy named Jared, and most of the interview, or last as I recall, went into this whole idea of farting.
Farting in a wheelchair.
Paraplegic farting farts. In a wheelchair. And
I remember that conversation well.
Yeah, like, popping off the chair a little bit with the good gas one.
Yeah, getting a certain resonance and vibration when you're farting into the cushion.
Yeah,
I've gotten this nice chamber underneath where I sit right now. It's like a space in my wheelchair cushion. It's kind of hollowed out. I fart these days, it creates this really nice sort of flapping, reverberating sound. It's like wop, pop, 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 pop.
Does it feel good? Does it feel good on the sinker too?
It's a bit like the motorcycle that you just pulled in off of.
Yeah.
It's like,
It's like a Harley pulling into to park. I wow, pop, 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 pop.
Exactly. It's not.
Hey, I can't feel a goddamn thing. Friend, I don't even know.
He can't fucking feel anything.
And that's the funniest thing, too. This could happen anywhere. You know, this happens in public sometimes. I have no idea it's coming. And suddenly it's. I'm like, well, hello. Hello to you, too. Nice to see you here. Yeah. No, I think your point well taken, Fred. I mean, that's the funny thing, right? Is that and it's part of this whole categorization thing that human beings seem to be so challenged with too. We want to find a certain way of identifying the person that we're with and saying, okay, this is appropriate for this type of person, but this isn't appropriate for this type of person. And, you know, boy, we put a lot of rigid constraints on us through doing so. I think this is a big part of why I love, you know, the practice of just being in the moment so much is it's like life should be dynamic. We should be able to modulate. We should be able to get serious and talk about something that is deeply traumatic and then be able to turn the volume way up and go into something that's incredibly funny spontaneously. Like, what is it? I'm really curious about what is it that has it that we fixate on a certain way of relating to people where we automatically try to decide what is appropriate and what's inappropriate for any given context and any given conversation and any given person. And why do we tend to not be more dynamic in how we relate to each other? Like, I would always appreciate erring on the side of humor, no matter what, because what is humor ever going to do? And this is something that I think this particular, this younger generation is having a hard time with these days, is this notion that there are these victims out here who we simply can't be funny with because they are such victims of the society and the culture and the stereotypes. And they're already so marginalized that we can't make fun of anything or have any joy. It's like, are you fucking kidding me? I mean, it is joy and humor that keeps keeps this whole thing in fun. I mean, the overemphasis on sincerity going on in the world these days is fucking disgusting. It's just
awesome. What do you got about that, Sean? Talk to us a little bit about humor.
Humor. When the funniest moments with Sam and I. Sam, let's take them back to our funny moment, our funniest moment ever.
What's the funniest moment?
Exactly. Ever, what am I, come on, what am I thinking about? It was after your breath workshop.
And after my breath workshop, what?
I was driving home.
Oh, God. Jesus. Holy shit. Yeah, we were at a breathwork workshop in Topanga, and we went out to eat a couple hours later, we drove home, and Sean is driving his SUV. I'm riding in the passenger seat. We're driving on Topanga Canyon Boulevard. For those of you who don't know, Topanga Canyon Boulevard is a twisty road that goes in Topanga Canyon, California, just outside of Los Angeles. And it's this twisty road that goes up over a mountain and down the other side. And Sean can't really see out of his left eye. He has basically no ability to see out of his left eye. And he has a bit of a struggle keeping the car in the lane that it's meant to be in anyway. And it's dark and we're driving on a twisty road. So he's driving like 25 miles an hour into the other lane. and I'm like white knuckling it. I literally went searching through his glove box going, there's got to be some drugs in here. What do you have? Any edibles, anything in here? I'm looking for something to numb myself a little bit because there was about a 50-50 chance that I was going to die that night. And at one point we came down the other side of Topanga Canyon Boulevard and he's just driving full speed, just straight into someone's driveway. I'm like, this is not the road. This is a driveway. I mean, it was just, I'm amazed that we made it back that night safely. And I don't think I've been in Sean's vehicle since then, even though I think he's a much better driver now than he used to be, apparently. So,
you know, what's so interesting, Sam, is thinking about that story now, looking at me now, I've healed. I've grown so much since then. In so many levels, in so many, I mean,
how I was so misfiring. And back then I was exhausted, you know, after your breath work, and there's no excuses, but yeah, I mean, I want to say my vision has come back tremendously. My being able to look and drive better at night or during the day has been remarkable, but my overall feeling of just getting through, I think, because when I found you, I was in a sense of real darkness. And now, you know, definitely had to come out of the light. And when I did, and I am now, it's a different me just in 4 years or however long it's been.
Yeah. I mean, when you started drinking urine, I think that was the real game changer for your real feelings when you started doing the urine therapy.
Well, you started giving me the urine.
Everything changed at that point.
You just kept throwing your captain around in my lap, so I had to drink something.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, so listen, I wonder if you can, you know, Sean, it's been a pleasure having you here. And I really get that, you know, one of the things I'm really noticing about you is that in order for you to stay balanced into how serious it is, how grief-ridden it is, how depressing it is, how scary it is, how your future, you know, what you need to do, what you have to do, the maintenance of your life, and then who you get to be for others and who you get to be, you know, when you're just humorous or a lot of levity, and who you get to be as a friend or as a man or as a father or as a, you know, as a husband, as a human. And, you know, it's really been beautiful to get a picture of this. And I am deeply compassionate with all the balancing that you have to do in every single minute of your life. And I feel like my capacity to just respect you from here to forever and back has just grown to multiple levels. And I'm pretty sure my listeners or our listeners also agree with that. And you're really just... you know, you really just are another dude. I mean, I hear you. You're really just another dude. But the balancing act that you do includes some features that maybe not all of us have to do together. And it's remarkable. You're a remarkable human being. It's been a pleasure having you on the show.
Well, thank you, Fred. I will tell you, you, I don't know if you know this, but you've been a big part of my healing. Back in the day when we spoke, am I allowed to be open on everything?
You are, but you have 1 minute. We have 1 minute before the show has to end, but bring it.
Oh, really? Okay. Oh, because I was gonna talk about, you know, no, another psilocybin trip you actually helped me to take to go in there and clear out the PTSD and help me through that. And you were there with Sam and myself when I was going through that journey of that I went on a journey for 6 weeks, one day a week for about 6 weeks at 2.3 grams. And you were there with me, and I wanted to thank you, Fred, for just showing up for me as like you always do. You showed up for me a month and a half ago or more recent than that. And I know that you're always in my corner, and I love you, Fred. Always. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And Sam, dude, you're the best. Thanks for being the co-host. Thanks for bringing your shit again today.
Always a pleasure.
There we have it. There we have it. Another episode. We're tailing off on another episode of True Voice with Dr. Fred. It's just a brilliant episode. And thanks for hanging on. And thanks for loving us. And, you know, share the episode as you will. And we will catch you in a couple of weeks. We got a new guest. Oh, and I guess our next guest will be in a couple of weeks after that. Can't wait to have y'all meet Aaron Baker. But in the meantime, have a great life. Welcome to True Voice. Go get them. Talk to you later. Bye for now. Happy Thanksgiving. Hello, everybody, and I just wanted to thank you for getting through another episode of True Voice with Dr. Fred. Wasn't that great? It is so much fun to interact with people and then interact with my listenership about really finding True Voice and then bringing it forward. I really have never done anything more important than this, and I'm finally aligned with myself by helping others find their true voice. Let's find your alignment. What do you really want in your life?